Koji is a venture capital firm cultivating community. This podcast is dedicated to cultivating conversations. Web 3.0 is democratizing the internet, and Koji Conversations is here to democratize access to the founders, investors, and creators building it from the ground up. Today, we are speaking with Kerry, the co-founder of The Fabricant. The Fabricant is a digital fashion house operating at the intersection of fashion and technology, designing all the Web3 digital garments that you will be wearing in the metaverse, and also cultivating online fashion experiences. The Fabricant is a digital-only fashion house, which will be an extremely important part of the metaverse, as Web3 fashion will be how you express your identity in these online social areas. In this conversation with Kerry, we dive into his background and how he's helped build this nascent industry from the ground up. We go into his ideologies and his high-level vision pieces for what is really behind The Fabricant and what's driving his intention to create something positive in this new environment. We touch on the idea of the closed and open metaverse, what it means for this industry moving forward, and where Kerry sits on that scale. So without further ado, here's our conversation with Kerry. Kerry, thanks so much for coming on Koji Conversations. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I feel like every time we have a chat, it's so candid, and you know, it's always nice to meet like-minded people in the crypto space and Web3. Yeah, how you doing?
Yeah, all good. It's 9:15 here in Amsterdam. I've already had my two calls in the morning. I'm right in the middle of raising investment right now. So like raising investment always feels like you're tripping on LSD while on a roller coaster ride. So it's like my 10th week in this process. So I enjoy it, but it's just like everything is my whole life is around investment at the moment. So, but for the rest, all good.
That's a great analogy. And you're raising for The Fabricant. I think correct. What we usually do when we have someone like a founder come on is we do a quick elevator pitch or 1 to 2 minutes of what the project is. So yeah, I guess, what are you building with The Fabricant?
So what we're building with The Fabricant is the digital fashion industry as a whole. And where we're starting out is giving people the tool and access for them to create their own digital fashion designs so they can create their own metaverse identity, essentially making everybody a digital fashion designer, similar to how the smartphone made everybody a content maker, made everybody a photographer, a videographer. Everybody started editing their own movies, distributing it on YouTube, marketing it on social media, and just really create their own narratives in very unique ways, where we just truly found out that everybody has a need for creative expression. And fashion is like one of those untapped opportunities within the metaverse right now, something that's going to be way larger than the physical fashion industry in the future. So we're building the digital fashion industry. Our starting point is the ownership of digital fashion. So the wardrobe experience, where you get to create your own items for your wardrobe, have access to your own items in the wardrobe, and then sell those items in shop fronts, or use them as AR filters, play them in NFT games, or share it on social media. So that's where we are right now. And where we're going to be in the future is basically just literally remake the full fashion industry, but for the metaverse. And we say that we're always digital and never physical. We're not interested in creating physical components of our digital items. We want them to simply stay fully digital all the time. People are free to make their physical items if they want, but I tell you, the supply chain is a massive hassle. It's totally unsustainable for this world, and it's totally not scalable. So that's why we're truly focused on the digital only. Sustainability and scalability, super important keywords in our organization.
Man, you've gotten so good at that.
I decided to do it in a little bit different way than I do for investors, but that's literally what we're building, and that's literally what we're super excited about. And that's the big opportunity, you know, like get to take something from the old world, leave the old world behind, and create the new world, while always really focusing on how do we create value? How do we not mimic the toxicity of the old world? And when I talk about toxicity of fashion industry, talk about the environmental side. So if you haven't seen the documentary called The True Cost, it's on Netflix. It's a great insight on how polluting the fashion industry is. Then there's the cultural toxicity of working for a fashion company. 80% of the students that come out of fashion institutes, they do not end up being a designer at any company. They basically have to go through intern to junior to mid to senior, and hardly anybody makes it out to creative director when everybody wants to be a creative director. So we're really focused on the accessibility and the inclusivity of the fashion industry, but simply by giving the tools to people, having everybody to have the same access and the same opportunity as, you know, a kid in Paris versus a kid in Bangladesh, for instance. Basically, anybody with an internet connection, anybody with a device like a smartphone or a laptop should have the same opportunity. Simply, it should not be defined by geography. It should be just defined by access to, you know, these type of things like internet, which is becoming very much accessible for everybody in the world at the moment.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good drive. And I feel like that's also sort of leaning on a lot of ideologies of what sort of the crypto and Web3 space is doing generally. And it's sort of just building out that narrative in a different subsegment of what's already been built here. And I think to your point as well, the metaverse in particular in recent times has, I guess, been validated in a sense. If you asked, you know, anyone in the crypto industry maybe 1 or 2 years ago, they could have said something different. I know that you've been building in particular in this space since 2018. So it'd be great to sort of dive into what you saw then and how your vision for what the metaverse is and was has changed, because you've been building in this space since the beginning, basically.
That's a great question. And it's definitely something that has evolved. It was not like a epiphany moment where I saw the lights and I'm like, oh my God, this is going to happen. No, it's literally just started already in 2016. Simply from just seeing something online, which was like a clothing animation. And my background is in film and visual effects and worked in the animation industry for over a decade. But cloth animation was always super difficult. Even for the big like visual effects movies from Hollywood, cloth animation is always like, it's non-fashionable. It's just really focused on, you know, getting it technically right rather than making it fashionably beautiful. And all of a sudden, I just saw like one animation from a Berlin-based animation company called Zeitgeist. Absolutely love what they're doing. And that put me in this path of like, hey, I want to try clothing animation. So around March 2016, I'm like, oh, cool. I open up my 3D software. I'm going to be like, I'm going to make the most amazing, you know, cloth animation. I'm super inspired right now. I was just like complete fail. I was just like, wow, this 3D software clothing animation is not working out at all. And then it was a friend of mine who pointed me out at this software that was coming from the fashion industry called Marvelous Designer, which is basically a software where you can design and simulate or animate clothing. And it was super easy to use, and I just got super excited by it, which really led me more towards the fashion industry, where I started connecting with fashion designers. And when I started connecting with fashion designers, I realized that digital fashion was not a thing. And in 2016, our lives were completely digital already. Every single design industry had gone through digitization. Film and visual effects are, you know, already started in the early 90s. Photography had gone through that. Architecture, automotive, basically every single design industry, digital, just not fashion. So it was very easy to predict that fashion was also going to digitize simply because the tools started being available. So I met a few digital fashion designers here in Amsterdam, and Amsterdam has been a great kind of innovation spot because of the Amsterdam Fashion Institute really busting out, let's say, that knowledge of digital fashion to students. And my current creative director, Amber, was actually the first person ever to graduate out of a fashion institute with a digital-only portfolio. So she didn't produce any physical items for her graduation. She fought her way through school. But the teachers were like, no, this doesn't make any sense. But there were a few key figures who really believed in her and allowed her to graduate with that digital-only portfolio. When me and her met, we just started collaborating. You know, we were creatively aligned. Visions were aligned. I learned a lot from her. She learned a lot from me. We tested some technicalities. And together with another friend of mine, we did a lot of technical development in 2016 to really see if this is a viable thing, or is it like something that's just like, takes like 6 months to do. But within a few months, we were able to create a so-called pipeline, which allowed for really high quality animations in a very simple manner. And that's when I was sold. That's why I'm like, okay, if it's so easy to do this for us, this is going to be a massive thing. So in 2017, started doing business development because we had the creativity, we had the technology, but you know, you can't do anything if you don't have a proper business model in place. So literally 2017, only about figuring out how can we make money with digital only fashion, you know, so really removing the physical component out of it, because that was too easy. And we definitely were not excited about that. So two opportunities. Gaming was the one that we were excited about. It was impossible to get to these gaming companies, like literally impossible. So gave up on that fairly fast. But of course, been speaking to gaming companies ever since, because I knew that at some point they're going to open up. And of course, right now is the point with the NFT games. But still, the traditional gaming industry very closed off, especially in 2017. And then the second opportunity was really working with fashion brands. And working with fashion brands, there were three ways in. One was, you know, fix their sampling, because typically sampling is like a physical component. You send a sketch to, let's say, Asia. 2 weeks later, you get a physical sample back. You put some post-it notes on the physical sample. You send it back to Asia, and it goes back and forth like that. So before you even have really settled on your garment, it takes about 6 to 8 weeks. 3D solves that. You can make it literally 1 to 2 days. But what we found out, no money in that section, because that was product. I'm like, okay, well, they don't have money, but it's cool. Then the other one, marketing projects. Well, we quickly realized the marketing departments, they have all the budgets, and the marketing departments are looking for something new to do. Like the fashion industry is all about novelty, all about showing off and being the first of its kind. So when we were already doing these high quality animations, so we got noticed through that very quickly. And the third aspect that I was looking at is the idea of a VTO, a so-called virtual try-on, basically being able to fit digital clothing on yourself before you make a purchasing decision. So for instance, coming to a website, you know, like let's say Nike.com, and you're like, oh, I like those pants, I like that shirt. How would that look like on me? You know, you would need to have a digital avatar of yourself so you can see it on yourself, so you can make proper decisions on does it fit you? So to go against returns in the fashion industry, because returns is a massive problem for the fashion industry itself. I found out technically very complex, and the mindset of people don't want to have 3D avatars of themselves because it's scary. It's literally like, you should download a few of these kind of apps that exist and just make a digital avatar of yourself. It's not there to the point yet where you get excited about your, let's say, virtual twin. That's why most of these avatar makers as apps, you know, they opt for the, let's say, the cartoony look, so you don't get too scared of your digital twin in that instance. So 2018, put up a website, put up an Instagram with all this content that we had produced the past 2 years, and you had to start really contacting companies. Nike is here in my neck of the woods. Literally a day after I put up the website and put it on LinkedIn, somebody from Nike called me up and it's like, wow, this is super cool. We gotta get you in. I was super excited. I went over there 3 weeks later to give a presentation. They were super excited. I'm like, oh man, this is gonna, you know, get started in a great way. And then I'm like, okay, how about we do something? And the guy is like, yeah, we're Nike. Typically takes us about like 6 to 12 months before anything starts moving here. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll keep working on it. But I can already tell you, I still haven't worked with Nike 4 years later. So it's slow moving. They're doing their own thing. I don't mind. But it was actually a luxury retailer out of Hong Kong called IT who found our stuff on Instagram, got in touch, and we just started talking. And then about 4 months later, we just started the dream project, the biggest dream project that I could have ever really dreamt of at that point to get. It was a massive budget. It was working with all the luxury fashion brands from here in Europe, including Alexander McQueen, Off-White, so many other ones that we got to digitize. And that really got it kickstarted for us. So I said, everything's been very serendipitous for us. Like, I've always had to work hard in my life to get anything, you know, like, I always, you know, like, because my surname is Murphy, I always say that I have like Murphy's Law against me, you know, like whatever can go wrong will go wrong with that idea. But ever since the beginning of the Fabricant, like things just been clicking right into its place. Like the people that I meet, the timing of the industry itself, and everything that's just happening, like it feels like it's like smooth sailing. and the industry is growing very, very fast. But I feel like I'm right in the middle of the eye of the storm, where it's just kind of like there's all this stuff happening around me, and I'm just like just feel quite confused and super excited. And we're getting to build some really great things, and we have great milestones. Like we sold the first digital couture item on the blockchain in May 2019 for 54 ETH, which was $9,500 back then. That really got this kind of massive wave of PR rolling for us. Then in 2020, when the pandemic hit, the whole fashion industry started digitizing, and we got to work with some of the largest, the most known people from the fashion industry, including Virgil Abloh, and just a lot of other exciting things. And then now in 2021, we've been on the cover of Vogue magazine, the first ever company to have a digital-only garment on the cover of Vogue magazine. You know, so those are great milestones that we can be super proud of. But there's just so many other things that I'm super excited about constantly. And just being connected to the people who are building, especially coming from the crypto space, I'm just like, wow, like everybody's in it to build this new world. Like it's like this vision of what everybody has, and everybody like really wants to contribute value and really go against like existing power structures. It's just super exciting. It's like everything that we could have ever dreamt of, like really building it from this grassroots approach, from this really kind of a small level approach to, you know, like define the future, you know, that's going to have application to everybody's lives. Like, honestly, 2020, the year when the pandemic hit, but also the year when the shift towards the metaverse started coming. I think, you know, this is definitely going to be one of those moments in history that we're going to be talking about for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Completely agreed. And I think that brings me into the next point, which is obviously recently Facebook has changed their parent entity name to Meta. They've invested a lot of money into the metaverse. Mark Zuckerberg releases his hour-long video of an intro to the metaverse. What's your take on all of this, I guess, especially when you consider the open versus closed metaverse?
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting topic. And it's funny how I see a lot of different opinions online. Especially like I thought the whole crypto community is going to be super against it, but there's actually a lot of people who are for it. And I think the good thing about it is what Mark Zuckerberg has done. He's portrayed, or he's painted, you know, what the vision looks like. But, you know, the thing that we're all talking about, you know, he made an hour long video of showing like how it's actually going to work. You know, like I think all of us, you know, crypto native people, you know, we're already capable of seeing where it's going towards. But the mainstream is not capable of seeing. The mainstream doesn't even use the word metaverse, so yet alone how to interact with blockchain. So we're kind of like or in this privileged position that we have the ability to see where this future is going towards. To what Zuckerberg did, he made that vision mainstream. He made that vision accessible so everybody can understand what's coming from it. Now, where I get a little bit allergic for it, it's just that just because of all the, let's say, the drama around Facebook the past 10 years, my question is like, how are they going to fix that? How are they going to actually create the decentralized, co-created collaboration environment? And how much power are they, you know, hoping to take? You know, like how big of a chunk of a pie do they want out of this metaverse? And, it, you know, it's starting to look more and more like this kind of Ready Player One type of situation where massively. Facebook is like the evil corporation trying to take control of the and we are like the individual people who are fighting against it. That's what it feels like, but you know, like I think it's too black and white. I think it's going to be a more of a gray zone version from it, because there's going to be a lot of people who are not going to understand or even care about the implications. And then we still have to think about the differences between, let's say, the developed world versus the developing world. And it's just like how all the different needs, like from a socioeconomic perspective, when a lot of people are still basically, you know, fighting to get food on the table every single day, are they really going to care about this meta stuff? You know, are they really going to care about like the metaverse side of things? Our question is always like, how do we create something that actually allows for economic prosperity for basically anywhere in the world where you have access to laptop devices, smartphone devices, and internet connection? And my question for Meta is the same thing. You know, do they care for that? Or are they just looking to, you know, just take more and more power out of it. You know, I'm sure their intention is to do good. I think nobody ever has an intention of like, hey, I'm going to dominate the world and, you know, make everybody my slave. You know, so I'm sure they have a, you know, that vision. However, are they capable of, you know, really creating that? Are they capable of coming out of their, you know, let's say funnel vision that they already have, you know, and just like see the world in a completely different manner? And then another question I have is like, you know, from a business model, you know, if I think about the Fabricant, I get scared because actually Meta, you know, if I talk about, you know, from a purely business perspective, the new exit strategy for the Fabricant is sell to Meta, because all of a sudden Meta.
Terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, what would happen? Oh, if Zuckerberg comes to us and it's like, oh, hey, Carrie, is, you know, 100 billion, whatever. I don't know what their amount is. Like, it's like, how would we go about that? How do we ensure that, you know, if that point happens, that we haven't given away so much equity of the company that we're not the majority stakeholders anymore? So we have that decision in our hands, instead of just being like, you know, true capitalistic money grabbers and be like, okay, oh, cool. Yeah. Now we're going to sell and do something else. I don't know, you know, so there's a lot of things that I'm, you know, really excited about. You know, one is the side that he's made the vision accessible for everybody to now understand. Now the true building starts, because all of a sudden Microsoft has the metaverse strategy. And, you know, like every single company, like we already say it with fashion brands, every single fashion brand has an NFT strategy. They have no idea what they're doing, but they're trying. And, you know, like Nike is already hiring a metaverse director. You know, if Nike is hiring a metaverse director, everybody's going to have a metaverse director before you know it. So all of a sudden, this space just started accelerating. And another thing, like all my cryptocurrencies from, you know, Decentraland and Sandbox, it's just like going through the roof simply because of the Zuckerberg announcement. So it's actually creating prosperity for all the people who are already in the space itself. But yeah, we just need to ensure that, you know, this mega corporation is not going to, you know, let's say rule the metaverse, as we call it, or like that they're going to get everybody there and, you know, everybody else is going to be struggling, and that we're just going to have to be like, damn, we have to take part in the metaverse, Facebook metaverse.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, sort of just to like provide like a high level opinion there, it's as long as sort of the Web3 sort of core values remain intact throughout this whole process, then I think the space is moving forward in a way in which will benefit everyone in more or less an equal position, where people, I guess, get access to the value that they are creating rather than someone else extracting value that someone else creates in these environments. And I think that's one of the largest pieces when it comes to this open and closed metaverse environment that looks like it's playing out. And I guess to bring it back to the Fabricant and what you're building, obviously you've got a huge sort of lean into societal benefits, because as you were just saying earlier, one of your key areas of focus is equalizing opportunity between individuals regardless of where they live, and then also environmentally friendly ways of being able to design, in particular how digital fashion and Web3 fashion allows you to do so in a way that's emission positive or emission reductive in a sense. So those ideologies, how do they come about in the Fabricant? So how exactly are you equalizing the opportunities for individuals, regardless of where they live, when it comes to building a garment, for example?
Great. Yeah, great question. That's definitely something that keeps us awake all the time, of like, you know, mainly from the economic side of how do we create an economic system within the platform itself that really allows for economic prosperity in simple ways, you know, having a proper user experience, so you don't have to be like some total crypto native person to be able to work with the platform itself. From the fashion design perspective, we're creating the tool that gives access to people to express their creativity in a new way. And I think a similar question, if we just wind back maybe 12 years before the smartphone came out, how did the smartphone give people access to new revenue streams? You know, like simply by having the tool in its hand. And it's just like, I always use especially the photography side of things. It really revolutionized photography, because we also realized that content is more important than quality. You know, the content that you put in, the story that you put in front of the camera is more important than knowing how to use the tool. And especially since I come from the visual effects industry, the focus, like 90% of the time, is like, how do we make a cool explosion? You know, how do we make like something that's visually amazing, technically amazing, but we much less ask the question, what is the story that we're telling? What is the emotion that we want people to feel when they see this content? And that's the essence of for any director when they're making a movie. You know, they're essentially directing emotion. They're not directing, you know, the beauty of the photography. That's a DOP, a director of photography, who just comes in and just makes sure that, you know, like the director's vision is coming across visually. But it's directing emotion. And just like everything that we've seen gone through, you know, like from YouTube clips to Vine. Vine was a massive thing. I can't believe that they quit. Yeah. To like TikTok right now. It's just like the funniest thing. I'm just like laughing my ass off every single day from the TikTok content that I see. And it's typically like dog movies or cat movies, but it's much richer than that. And it's just like, simply, it's just by giving the access and the tool to people to create this new content that we haven't seen before. And that's what I absolutely love. And that's why my question is, like, if we create this tool that's super accessible, that allows everybody to have very powerful tools in their hand to create their own digital fashion, how will they use that? How will the communities grow around the tool? How will the tool get a life of its own where the content becomes king, the storytelling becomes king, and that people just start using the tool in ways that we haven't even been able to think about? That's how we, you know, really think about, you know, creating a tool that's accessible for all and seeing how it's going to take a life of its own. And then, of course, create that system, that economic system within the tool itself and within the ecosystem that we live in. Because when I talk about the ecosystem, it's also all the partners. You know, we talk about decentralization, co-creation, and collaboration. Those are literally the three keywords that we live by. And we want to work together with people who have the same values as we do. So those are the questions that we have. I don't have direct answers how that's going to play out. You know, who knows? Maybe we become like an evil Facebook while we're trying to create the, you know, a positive new world. But it's just like those values need to be aligned. And as long as our intentions is really like the intention of decentralization and co-creation, rather than trying to take, you know, hold of power and just make a lot of money, because that's what I observe in the, say, capitalistic industry. You know, the main intention is just to make money in the end. And that should never be the intention of any company. And that's literally what we're trying to do, but also we are doing it and we are creating it. And we feel that the people around us are supporting us in the best way possible. There's enough of us, you know, really to come together and co-create that environment, which is, yeah, built the decentralized metaverse.
I like that. And I feel like you touched on a lot of high level vision pieces and ideologies there. But sort of to boil it back down to earth a little bit and to tether it with reality, what is the Fabricant product? And the second part of the question is, how does someone interact? It's like a user, not a creator, interact with the Fabricant product. And yeah, I guess how can they interact with the Fabricant product today?
Yeah, cool. Great question. Okay, let me wind myself away from the vision level and back into practicalities. Of how how does it exactly work? So the platform itself, we're really focused on different use groups. We are focused on creators, but we're also focused on people who just want to curate collections, people who want to only have a storefront and only sell the items themselves.
Yep.
So we have a so-called co-creator. So, and I'll use an example. So we have one of the world's largest brands on the platform itself coming up in season one, end of November, where a user can come in and co-create together with the brand. So an example would be, I come to the platform, I choose the brand, let's say bomber jacket, and I see that I have a list of materials that also have been created by material creators, people who specialize in only making prints. And I say, oh, I love that print. I wanna see a combination of that print with that jacket. I'm gonna combine those two. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, wow, that looks amazing. And that really comes from the user's creativity. And then they later on, they're going to have the tools like choosing your own buttons, choosing your pockets, putting your own logos, you know, like just really creating a very powerful Garmin configurator, similar to like what games have, like avatar configurators, we're just building the world's, you know, most powerful Garmin configurator. Now, once you've created that item, it's yours. And you are the only person who owns that item. It's unique. It's a one out of one. And since you are the owner and creator of that, you have the power now to either hold it. And you, the reasons why you would want to hold it is because you either see long-term value in it and you think someone's going to buy it later on. Another reason would be because you want to wear it in AR. Another reason is because you want to play it in an NFT game. And another reason is, you know, just you want to, you know, share it on your socials and be like, I am the owner of this, make some content around it. So those are the utility cases. Now, if you choose to put it on a marketplace, we have a marketplace launching in the coming weeks. That's when the people who have zero interest in actually creating their own items, they just want to be like, oh, I want to go to this virtual event. Oh, I want to play this game, but I want to look unique. Oh, I'm going to go to the Fabrikant Studio marketplace and just pick a unique item. You know, similar to what you do like before there's a party, before there's some event.
Yeah, massively.
You know, like, you're just like, oh, I need to get some new clothes because there's this new event coming up. You know, we all do it, some people more than others. But now in the metaverse, you can do the same thing. And it's just like, we just want the Fabrikant Studio to be top of mind when people are thinking of creating their identities in the metaverse places where they exist. So they can just come to the marketplace, buy that for their event. And another one that I foresee, and I'll use Star Atlas as an example, because they're building their own ecosystem. Like, I don't like to use the terms metaverses, you know, like I think it's just one metaverse and we have multiple different ecosystems. Some people use, you know, this metaverse, that metaverse, you know, so we're still learning to talk about the metaverse in a unified way. But I just say that there's ecosystems within the metaverse, and Star Atlas is just one ecosystem, and they're creating an environment where you can have your own store. So we see that some people just going to come, they're not even going to play the game. They're just going to set up their own store. And then they're going to come to the Fabrikant marketplace, to pick a few items that they like, put it into their store. Then they might go to like Artifact, pick a few sneakers, you know, put the Artifact sneakers into the store, then go to Digital Axe, you know, get some items from there, put it into the store. So some people really going to be curating their own store, similar to how it happens in the real world, like just retail. You know, you just set up a physical building and you bring all these different physical brands within the building and you sell it from there.
Cool.
For your own margin. Same thing is going to happen in the metaverse.
Interesting. So I guess, and let me know if I'm wrong, but the Fabrikant Digital Axe, for example, could be seen as sort of the raw producers of the input goods. So you've got sort of the garment layers, the textures, the colors. It can also be seen as a bit of a wholesaler providing finished garments to these storefronts. And then it can also be a storefront in and of itself with individuals coming and sort of, I guess, using different sections or different textures, colors, garment layouts, combining those together, having that as their own finished product. So is the Fabrikant then sort of like an infrastructure layer for a lot of different products to be built upon? I say products, what I mean is sort of Web3 fashion items.
I love that. And that's exactly correct. I wouldn't call it that we're the raw goods, because we bring the raw goods to our platform and we find unique ways of combining those raw goods. And when we talk about raw goods, you know, we got materials, we got the jackets or the base layers themselves, which is, you know, so you don't have to know about patterns. You don't need to know about drape and fit. You don't need to know about the true craftsmanship of fashion. You just need to have an eye for, you know, something that you like. And everybody's creative in their own way. Even though some people say they're not, everybody has creativity to them. So it's just like, again, providing this environment where you get to create your unique combinations.
Mm.
So typically it would be like a brand would do all of that work themselves, but we're actually, you know, not so much about one entity anymore. It's multiple different entities. And everybody has the same rights to it, because in the fashion industry, the brand itself, they exploit the manufacturers, they exploit the raw material, textile designers. They're just trying to get everything as cheap as possible to put these items together and then sell it for as much as possible for high margin. We're actually really about bringing all of those, like the manufacturers, the sources, the creators, okay, the brands all together, and everybody gets an equal chunk of that pie. And then from there on, it moves on, you know, further into the metaverse.
Okay, so much like how DeFi allows any individual to participate with the same tools as a bank, what you're building with the Fabricant allows any individual to participate with the same tools as a brand.
I love that. Absolutely. I had not made that connection, but that's exactly correct.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Carrie, dude, I feel like I could talk to you for hours, but absolutely, we will wrap it up. Is there any sort of last comments you want to add? Maybe places people can go find you, anything like that?
People can find us anywhere. I don't think not on any online platform. It's just the Fabricant digital fashion. I think even if you Google digital fashion, it's like we're the first thing that comes up. Then something that I would like to wrap up with is really this idea again of co-creation. We want to create the world's largest digital fashion show, world's largest digital fashion catwalk event that's co-created and decentralized, and it comes through collaboration. We're creating the tools and we want everybody to take part in that. Similar to what Travis Scott did on Fortnite, his concert that brought 12 million people on there. It was a centralized event, basically organized by Fortnite, Epic Games. We want to create the same type of idea, but now together with the community itself. We're going to create the tools. We're going to create the event platform where we're going to host our own show, where we're going to use our own tools. And we just want everybody else to take part in that idea that, you know, it's about co-creation. It's about people coming together. There can always be a competitive element that's healthy. But in the end, you know, especially right now, the digital fashion world is all about co-creating it together with all the partners, Artifact, Digital Axe, us, and everybody else in the space. We really need to be able to work together to really build it with this ideology that we've been speaking with on this call, and really just not try to centralize and take as much of the power as possible, but really coming in it together with the same vision. And I think that's the way we're going to be able to beat Mark Zuckerberg in the race.
Man, I love ending on that note. Well, Carrie, thanks so much for coming on. It's a pleasure chatting.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining this Koji conversation. To continue the conversation offline, DM us on Twitter at @Koji_capital or reach out to us via email hello@Koji.capital or jump into our Discord linked in our bio.